I think we're all influenced by the migrant influx into our country. It's not that long ago that we had the White Australia policy. It was just a nice time to reflect on their journey and celebrate the things that they've brought to the country.
So when we're talking about the migrant experience, and particularly in the early days, there was a fair degree of intolerance towards many of these new Australians.
The eldest person in the film, Mary, who was based up in Innisfail and she was part of the cane fields up there. She arrived pre-World War II in the 1930s and she speaks about as soon as she arrived, she wanted to go home because basically she came from a place where she was loved. And then you arrive here and they're in a completely different country, different environment, different language, all sorts of challenges. She came up against all sorts of racism, not only from suspicious locals.
The title of the film is La Signorinella, and this refers to a young woman. Now, about a decade ago, you chronicled the Italian man in your documentary about Lygon Street. What was it that wanted you to focus now on the women?
Basically, the first one was about the story of Italian migration through the story of a street, Lygon Street, which is very famous in Melbourne. And just through the parameters of studying a street, you're limited by the scale. It was a great conduit to tell the story of Italian migration, but we always thought there was a bigger one of something that was Australia-wide. And then you add into that that in the early 50s, most of the new migrants were men. We thought there was a great opportunity to hear it from a female migrant perspective, something that is rarely seen on screens.
So there's a lot of history that might not be that well known by many Australians, such as the internment camps during World War II that housed Italian migrants. And in the documentary, you interview the many women who were forced to work the hard labour of cutting cane and picking grapes to ensure their family farm survived. Do you think that this contribution of these women in agriculture is often overlooked?
I think their contribution in many fields is overlooked, but that story, it was a complete surprise to me. I had no idea about it, and I remember flying up to Brisbane to chat to Mary. I understood that they worked on the farms and things like that, but I didn't actually understand what actually happened. I knew post-World War II history, but I had no idea that as soon as World War II started, that they became the enemy overnight. And the Italian men were dragged off to internment camps all over Australia, and the women were left to fend for themselves and kept these farms going for years and years until the men returned. And they worked hard because not only did they have to look after the land, and but they had to look after the homes as well.
So when it comes to cuisine, having experienced different tastes provided an opportunity for a range of what would become Italian restaurateurs and people who would work in the food industry. You know, you discovered that many Italian migrants were able to find a hole in the market to the rather bland British meat and three veg. Can you talk a bit about the contribution Italian migrants would have towards changing the diet of many Australians?
I think it was a bit of a blank canvas. We were pretty basic in what we ate. And there's a quote from Olympia Bortolotto, who runs quite a few restaurants in Melbourne, that she says, "I just thought what we're doing was normal. All these foods that the pastas and the sauces that they'd make and the Italian salads that were called weeds at the time and things like that, this was just stuff that came naturally to the Italians." So as soon as they started infiltrating the kitchens in the big cities, that's when their influence was really shown, and people would come from everywhere to taste fresh pasta, and they're introduced to squid and calamari and all sorts of different things that they've never had before. I think secretly spag bol has become the national dish, and we all reckon that we cook the best one, so you can thank the Italian women for that.
Also, in the world of fashion, you chronicle the many trailblazers that pioneers such as Carla Zampardi, whose daughter Allegra Spender is now a pioneer herself in a different sphere. What was it about this generation of new designers that was so unique?
Well, I think they just had a style. In the late 50s and early 60s, they would just have these back rooms where they would service their own community, where they would be making dresses and suits and just basically patching things that their kids would come home with their worn knees and things like that. So they just had this skill and work ethic. And then once they went from the back rooms of their houses, there was this huge boom post-war. People wanted the latest styles and they wanted to dress up, and there was a little bit of wealth in the country. So then they went into all these different factories and applied their skill. And the Italians were at the top of the list of anyone of the workers that they wanted in because they had the skill and the work ethic. From that, they springboarded into design. And obviously, they brought all the fashion from Europe. And we're just making clothes that we'd never seen before, let alone manufactured here.
Australia has also had waves of migration. First of all, we talked about the Italian and the Greeks, but now we've got close to a third of the population was born overseas. So no longer is it the Australia of they're a weird mob. We are a vibrant multicultural community. Do you think the story of the Signorella also offers insights for people from other migrant backgrounds?
Yeah, it's definitely a universal story. This is the story of migration told through the Italian lens. But that migrant story is similar to so many other cultures that have come here. That story of arriving, not being accepted, and having to work hard and winning over the the Australian society and then becoming part of it and blossoming. And we talk about the Italians, that's the same as the Greek community, lots of people from Eastern Europe that came across. And then we talk about the Vietnamese community that came in the 70s, leading right up to the Sudanese community that's arriving now, and they're having their problems with racism and assimilation. But hopefully we can use this as a document of history of how it works and how the migrant experience hopefully plays out for all the new migrants that arrive. And hopefully as Australians, we can learn a little bit about being more tolerant and accepting of our new arrivals.
So you also mentioned the contribution Italian migrants would have upon the world of media and entertainment, being particularly influential in the development of SBS.
That's an incredible story. And basically, at the time, you just couldn't get any Italian news. I think there was one newspaper in Sydney and one in Melbourne, but the idea of hearing an Italian voice on the radio was just impossible. So with Al Grasby, who was the Minister for Communication, he came in and he got a group of migrant women together that helped form 2EA. And that basically came on to be SBS, and that was transmitted in 64 different languages. Imagine being a migrant that's feeling a little lost in our community here, not Italian enough, not Australian enough, and then get to hear your own language on the radio and then seeing it on TV. It was just an amazing thing to accomplish. When SBS started in 1980, it was a world first and something completely unique. Once again, we've got to thank the Italian women who were behind that, gave their time for free and really drove that.
So how hard was it to gather archival material? Did that take a lot of work?
You get archive from several different sources. The National Film and Sound Archive is incredible. And with the help of Lisa Savage, who is just the archive goat in this country, she helps track that down. And then the other side might be broadcast material. And then there's private material. So what would happen is that, say you go to someone's house, you have a coffee to start off with, which is kind of, you know, the Italian thing to do. And then you do the interview. And then usually afterwards, they'll bring a box of stuff out. And, you know, it's kind of like Christmas. You open this parcel and you never quite know what you're going to get. And it might be photos, you know, from the 30s or 40s. It might be an old DVD that might be a Super 8 from the 60s that hasn't even been developed. Archive comes from all sorts of different places. And it's one of those things that's just a complete surprise every time, but brings those moments and scenes back to life.